problems that these NFL athletes have. And I say big ones are too much time, too much money. And they're like, whoa, timeout, Jay. How is that a problem? Too much time, too much money? Well, if you don't have, if you're not grounded and you don't have a faith component, something to kind of that North Star that said, this is where we want you to, you know, be and head. And man, it can get you on the wrong path. And there's a statistic that the NFLPA puts out that 85% of guys that are out of the NFL 5 years are either divorced or broke or both.
Wow.
85%. So think about that. Only 15% of those guys are coming out of that without having a broken relationship or, you know, that nest egg is gone. And the stories that I could share with you of getting that mixed up and what that looks like is endless.
This is the Made to Advance podcast. I'm your host, Brian Olick. We're here to inspire and equip you for your best future. Well, today I'm so excited about the conversation I get to have with Jay Reimersma. Jay played football at the University of Michigan. Then he went on to play for the NFL for 9 seasons. After that, he did some political work and public policy work. And today he serves as the executive director of Gateway Mission. Jay, it is so good to have you with us. So here's my question for you that I want to start off with. I didn't let you know this one's coming in advance. I thought about 9 seasons in the NFL. And playing for 2 different teams. And I wondered, when it comes to football season in the fall, who do you end up rooting for? I mean, you've got 2 teams you played for. Right. You've got all kinds of teams you played against. So what do you do when it comes to time to turn on the TV?
Yeah, it's really a no-brainer for me.
Yeah.
I would say it's the Buffalo Bills.
Is it? Okay.
And the reason is because they gave me my first opportunity to play.
Yeah.
Right? They drafted me in 1996. The 7th round, about 2 or 3 picks away from being Mr. Irrelevant. So I missed out on my Disney trip. But, you know, they gave me the shot. And then we just had such a wonderful experience there. And it was just an incredible experience. You got a great fan base, good people, blue collar, hardworking people. Very similar to West Michigan, I would say.
Yeah.
And so there's just a strong connection for me there.
Did you go into the draft with, would you say, high, medium, or low confidence that you were going to get drafted?
Yeah, great question. I will tell you, funny story. So, you know, nowadays, all these guys go out and they do these big draft parties and that kind of stuff. But if you know, the last name is Reimersma, so it's a good Dutch name.
Yeah. Right?
And so I was raised right. You know, you save every dollar that you earn.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I didn't have any money coming out of college. And so it was literally my long time girlfriend and then fiance a couple months later, sitting together watching the NFL draft. And I had an agent and they were telling me, hey, listen, you're not going to go in the first day, so don't even watch. And then the second day came along. They said, well, you probably go early in the second day. And back then it was like, you know, first 3 rounds on the first day, the last 4 rounds then on the second day.
Yeah.
So a large part of that second day came and went. And I'm thinking, I'm not going to get drafted. What's going on? The agent keeps calling me and said, you got a chance. Don't worry. Hold off, you know. And I looked at Kara, my wife, now at the time of 25 years. And I said, you know, hun, what would be your best place to go? I mean, if we had a chance, you know, we're getting down. We might get not get drafted. Might be a couple people that want me as a free agent. What would be the best place to go? She's like, oh, you know, she's from West Michigan. We were high school sweethearts. She said, wouldn't it be great to go someplace warm? And I'm like, oh, yeah, like what? And she's like, Miami, you know? And I said, what would be the worst place to go? And she said, without hesitation, Buffalo.
I'm like, kidding.
Why Buffalo?
Yeah.
And she's like, haven't you ever watched the Weather Channel? They're always on location in Buffalo with some blizzard or something like that.
It's true.
Right? Yeah. And no less than, you know, the Lord has a sense of humor, no less than like 5 minutes later, Marv Levy calls me and says, hey, we're going to pick you with pick number 244. You're coming to the Buffalo Bills.
That's great. How did she react?
She was like, well, you know, Lord's got a plan, you know, I guess, and a sense of humor.
I always wonder, so you've got guys who are playing in super warm climates. You've got guys who are playing in super cold climates, at least for part of the season. Is there an, and then you, of course, as you're traveling, you've got to adjust. I mean, you could be down wherever. So is there an advantage to being trained for warm weather versus cold weather when it comes to facing opponents in different places?
Well, the irony, you know, for all those 7 years that I played in Buffalo, we played the Miami Dolphins. They were in our conference. And inevitably, we would go down to Miami in late August, early September. Whew. And yeah, smoking hot, yeah. Humid as all get out, right? Yeah. And we would play them then the last game of the year up in December in Buffalo.
No kidding.
Oh, they would come out of the locker rooms. They'd be all wrapped up in winter coats. They didn't want to hit a soul.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was always being at Michigan, kind of growing up in West Michigan, a cold weather guy. Mm-hmm. I embraced it. I never wore sleeves, never wore gloves, you know, and just to see those guys not wanting to hit anybody,
yeah,
coming out of the locker room, it's amazing. So
advantage. Yeah, that's what it seems like. It would be. That would have been my gut. But would have you heard other people argue the opposite, or is that a consensus position that it's better to be playing in cold weather and be ready for that, and then travel to hot?
Yeah. Well, you know, some people reacted differently. You know, there was some guys on our team that we just knew, because of history, that when they would go down in hot weather, humid climates, they'd cramp.
Oh, interesting.
You know, I always had enough fat that it didn't matter. So, cramp, you know,
cramp. No problems.
Huh? Yeah, fat doesn't cramp. Yeah. You know what I mean? But anyway, there was guys that just, we knew you had to have Pedialyte, you know, get your IVs, get mm-hmm. hydrated and all that kind of stuff. Now it's so much more scientific. Mm. You know, when I first came into the league in Buffalo, funny story, like literally there was still like cigarette canisters next to and attached to the locker room.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding you.
So guys could have a smoke.
Yeah. And the story was that the NFLPA got all upset because they cut the halftime down from 30 minutes to like 18 minutes. And it was because they could only get one smoke in instead of two. I mean, nowadays, you wouldn't even imagine somebody doing that, right? Yeah.
Even back then, I wouldn't have imagined it. You just don't. It's like seeing a doctor take a smoke break or something.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work together. Yeah, right. So,
right.
Well, it's so interesting. Your journey is such that you're playing at Michigan, and you had an injury that really changed your trajectory.
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear your story. I don't know the backstory of it. I mean, I know what happened, but what I don't know is how you process that, because an injury that significant does some things in a guy. So tell me about the injury itself, and then just kind of your immediate reaction, how you process that.
Yeah, so funny story again. I went in as a quarterback to the University of Michigan, got recruited all over the country. I know I don't look like it. I look like a tackle right now, which is not healthy. But, you know, it's funny too, because all those years coaches were telling me put weight on. I've been trying to take it off ever since.
Yeah, right.
It's like, come on.
Yeah.
But anyway, I went in as a quarterback, and always wanted to play for the University of Michigan. And so when University of Michigan called, offered me early, I was like, I'm done with recruiting. I'm going to the maize and blue with the winged helmet.
Yeah.
You know? And so went in, I played the quarterback position for 3 years, was vying for the starting position in spring ball mm-hmm. with Todd Collins, who had a great NFL career. We were great friends and actually came to know the Lord later on in his NFL career, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But, go back to throw a pass to Imani Toomer, and the ball goes end over end about 30 yards downfield. And the coach is like, what's wrong with Reimer's ball? You know, mm-hmm. what's going on there? And I had this like weird sensation in my shoulder, kind of went down into my elbow. And I was like, man, just please don't call another long pass.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as luck would have it, or divine providence, which is where I land, they called another long pass, and Mercury Hayes broke loose wide open. Safeties fell down, and I heaved it as hard as I could, and I felt this burning sensation all the way down into my pinky, and I had torn my rotator cuff in my throwing shoulder.
Wow.
And so I fought it, and looking back, I was so irritated because, you know, I was a solid Christian. I grew up in the faith.
Mm-hmm.
I accepted Christ at a very early age. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were twicers plus one. So we went twice on Sunday, once midweek. I mean, it was, you know,
all
that's
in.
What we did.
All
we were in.
Yeah.
And, but I really struggled. And I did what most tough football players do at that stage, right? They call mom. Mm. I called mom. And
that probably happens way more often than we know.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, son, I just got one question for you. Did you pray about it? And I'm like, oh, come on, mom, what's going on? And I hadn't, and I admitted that. So then, and I still get choked up to this day, because later on that night, I knelt down next to my bed in South Quad in Ann Arbor, and I prayed, Lord, you know, I wanted to do this since I was a little kid in front of 100-some thousand people touching the ball every time. but there's something bigger and greater for me. I don't know what it is, but I'm surrendering it to you. And within a couple weeks, the head coach called me into his office and said, hey, listen, you've been working through this injury. You know, we can rehab you. We can hold off and have surgery later. But, you know, we got this opportunity to play tight end. Try it for spring. If it doesn't work out, we'll put you back at quarterback. You get the surgery, you'll be all right.
Yeah.
And it turned into a 9-year NFL career. And I'm telling you, Ryan, I would have never played in the NFL if I would have been a quarterback.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
And those guys are so good, they can put the ball on a dime from 40 yards. I was never that good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it wasn't until I surrendered and said, hey, listen, it ain't about me, but Lord, what do you have for me?
Yeah.
The opportunity presented itself. And I fought that for a good few months.
Yeah.
You know, and I was, you know, my entire identity was tied up with being an athlete. It was always, oh, look how fast he can run. Look mm-hmm. how far he can throw. So that was taken away in college. Mm-hmm. And I could have turned to a lot of different things, but that call to my mom.
Yeah.
So that's my story.
That is such a great example, because even though for you it was on the field, every one of us is going to hit these massive setbacks where we think, how are we ever going to recover? This is the death of a dream, that kind of thing. And you can sit there and you can be mad and you can grieve it and you can do all these things, but and you did grieve it, it sounds like, but you just finally said, I need to surrender it. I'm just going to trust the Lord through this. And then all of a sudden, what felt like probably altogether a setback turns into the springboard for the rest of your future. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I love that.
And interestingly enough, you know, all the things that God was preparing me to do in the NFL, having the knowledge base of a quarterback playing the tight end position just accelerated my learning curve for the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. I ended up coming out of spring ball, the starter. I started for the next 2 years.
Wow.
And ended up getting drafted by the Buffalo Bills.
Wow.
And it's an amazing story, and it's not because of anything that I've done, but simply because of what the Lord was able to do through me.
Yeah.
And I've utilized that platform in pretty much everything that I've done, and it's been amazing just to see how he's blessed that.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that? Utilize that?
Well, I think at every facet, when you have such a huge life transformation, mm-hmm. and that's one of the things I'm sure we're going to talk about that we get to focus at Gateway mission all the time. But like when you have a transformation like that where you think you're on this path and I'm heading over here and Lord, this is me and I mm-hmm. want this. And then all of a sudden it's taken away for a season. And then you got to humble yourself and say, hey, what is best for the kingdom? What does the Lord want to see through this? And what does he want me to share with others? Mm-hmm. Man, I pivoted. It went on. And so I remember that to this day in everything that I do. And it does speak, I think, to real life, tangible experiences that everybody has.
Yeah.
Everybody's had a pivot point in their life.
Yeah.
Everybody's experienced trouble, trauma, grief, heartache. Mm-hmm. Oh, this job, this person was taken away from me. Surrender it to the Lord, and he'll use it somehow. I don't know how. But.
Yeah, that's what's amazing. You make the pivot, and it turns into like this platform. I mean, unbelievable. I love that. I think that all of us who are watching our favorite team or favorite athlete and whatever the sport is, there's always this sense where you're like, oh, but what's it like behind the scenes? So I just got to ask some curiosity questions, and I'm guessing there are a few people out there that would be interested in this. So when you think of things that we see a lot on TV, and now it feels like, of course, the way networks work today, it's like we're trying to get into every corner of athletes and teams' lives. But when you think of that inside experience, what would be some of the really just cool or fun things about playing and, you know, playing in the NFL, playing professional football that you go, yeah, just a normal person would not know this you're only going to know it if you play it.
Yeah. Well, one of the stories that I like to tell is my experience. I get frequently asked, probably by people like that attend Engedi, and you know, Brian, you might be wondering this too. It's like, what is the spiritual climate of the football team?
Uh-huh.
And I typically tell this story. So when I came to Buffalo, we had an experienced team. We had strong leadership. We're coming off the 4 Super Bowls and that kind of stuff. And Marv Levy then retires. And we kind of have this season of transition, and we get Wade Phillips. And one of the things that I looked at and I really appreciated about Marv is that we said the Lord's Prayer before every game. Huh. And so I was wondering if this is going to get lost in that transition and that kind of stuff. And so anyway, we get to the first game of the season. Wade calls us up and circles us up. And he said, in the past, we've always said the Lord's Prayer, and we're going to continue that tradition. He goes, but with one caveat, and the caveat's this, is that we're going to have a player lead it each week. And he goes, do I have a volunteer? And right away, this little guy that could walk under this table by the name of Doug Flutie pops up. Nobody knew he was standing.
Yeah.
He was literally this tall. But he said, Coach, I got it. And I was next to Eric Molds, who we came in together, and he bursts out laughing. And I'm like, what's the matter, Eric? He's like, listen, I've been in the huddle with Doug. I've been golfing with Doug, been out to eat with Doug. There's no way he knows the Lord's Prayer. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Everybody does. I said, I tell you what, if you're right and he doesn't know it, I'll buy you dinner. if I'm right, he was a first rounder. So I said, we're going to Ruth Chris.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
So anyway, here Doug huddles us up. We all sit down, we grab arms, and this is how he starts it. Now I lay me down to sleep. And I look over at Eric. Eric's shaking his head. I go, what's wrong, Eric? Eric goes, I didn't think he knew it. Anyway, not completely a true story, but I will say that the spiritual climate in the NFL is much better than what you would experience in college. That was my experience.
Interesting.
It was a job. It was something that people took very serious, right? And there was just influences with more maturity in the NFL that you didn't see in college, you know? Now, I will say some of my fondest memories are sitting in the huddle at I can remember a game that we played in Buffalo against Miami where Sam Gash, our fullback from Penn State, critical juncture in the game. It's, I don't know, fourth and two, coming up on the fourth quarter, and we need to score.
Yeah.
And Sam goes, cuz, do you see the blonde in the third row? And I was like, how in the world are you at this point?
Yeah, right.
Picking out that? Anyway, he wasn't married, so it was all right. But so we had some good memories. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Is there anything that, from a player's perspective, that is uniquely challenging that you'd feel comfortable talking about behind the scenes? Like, I was talking to a guy who was a QB at a D1 school in college, and he talked about playing through some injuries that were pretty crazy and what they were doing to make sure, like, you're going out on the field, and it just be stuff that the normal person wouldn't know had he not told me that. But anything that you're like, yeah, this is some of the challenging stuff that we see as professional athletes.
Yeah, and you know, I think one of the things, and it just popped in my head because my son just went through this. He's got mono, unfortunately, and he had his throat had inflamed, and can't do much about mono, but like his sore throat was so bad that they gave him a Toradol shot, and he was finally able to eat.
Wow,
you know, after 3 or 4 days of not eating, which he desperately needed. And he comes home and he piped up and he's like, oh, I'm feeling pretty good, you know? And he said, well, what happened? Well, I got a Toradol shot. I go, oh, I've had a few of those. So literally in the NFL at times, especially when I went to Pittsburgh, they would just have you sign something and say, hey, you know, this is kind of my process. And so they would dart, you know, 40 or 50 guys up, you know, in the locker room, in their butt.
Yeah.
And you got a Toradol shot. And I didn't know what it was, but I just knew that, oh, my joints limbered up. I loosened up. My dad's a pharmacist by trade. And so I came back and I said, man, they got this crazy thing. You sign a waiver and they shoot you with something. I said, it's anti-inflammatory. He's like, well, what's it called? He said, Toradol. I said, Toradol. He's like, that's not an anti-inflammatory, son. I'm like, well, now I know why I felt pretty good.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of craziness going on. It's an investment for the owners and, you know, the general manager. And there are high expectations of how you're going to take care of your body and whether or not you're going to be out there competing on Sunday afternoon, because it's critical for them to have you out there.
Right. You know, it's funny because you see guys that, and you had a pretty lengthy career, honestly, for as far, I don't know, what's an average NFL career? It's quite short, as I recall it.
It's like 2.5 years for guys that are undrafted. Drafted guys are like 3.5 years.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, you obviously went way beyond that. I always have thought about when a guy has played professional football and then has to go find a job. I mean, how do guys navigate that? It's like you've got such a weird resume.
Yeah.
Played football for the last however, or, and you kind of missed the jump on maybe where other folks were starting their career. Now you're a couple steps behind that because you've been doing something that generally speaking is going to be unrelated. Does the NFL like speak in at all on finding jobs? Is there any track that guys go down typically, or is it just like, man, once you're out, every man for himself, try to figure something out?
Yeah, well, they spend oodles of money to make sure that there's a transition in place and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
I will tell you personally, I struggled with it.
Yeah.
Because you're at the highest level of whatever you are trying to accomplish, mm-hmm. It's kind of like an Olympic athlete being at the Olympics, competing on that level. And so all of a sudden now you kind of have to take a step back and hit the reset button and go, hey, what can I do? What are my skill sets? And it's funny because I was just having a conversation with Jeff Lippman, who was Ralph Wilson's right-hand man, his finance guy. Mm-hmm. And we were chuckling about it the other day because he remembers when I was, two or three years into my career. We were sitting on the sidelines watching practice, and he and I were having a conversation because Mr. Wilson and Jeff are both from Michigan,
okay,
the east side of the state, and we were just kind of chumming it up and that kind of stuff. And he goes, do you even remember what you said to me, like the third year in? And I said, no. He's like, well, you said that you were concerned about where you would land after the career, and because you said, I'm getting further behind. I know guys that are, getting into their career, into their trade, into the field that they specialize in. And you said that you felt like you had lost some years. Hmm. And he goes, a couple weeks later, you signed a big contract. And I came back up to you and said, I don't think you have to worry about it much anymore. But, some people say, what are some of the problems that these NFL athletes have? And I say, big ones are too much time, too much money. Hmm. And they're like, whoa, timeout, Jay. How is that a problem? Mm-hmm. Too much time, too much money? Well, if you're not grounded and you don't have a faith component, something to kind of that North Star that said, this is where we want you to, be and head. And man, it can get you on the wrong path. And there's a statistic that the NFLPA puts out that 85% of guys that are out of the NFL 5 years are either divorced or broke or both.
Wow.
85%. So think about that. Only 15% of those guys are coming out of that without having a broken relationship, mm-hmm. or, that nest egg is gone. Mm-hmm. And the stories that I could share with you of getting that mixed up and what that looks like is endless.
Yeah. Well, it's a really good reality check because it seems like sometimes we'll have this idea of, if we just could make it big in whatever it is and mm-hmm. have whatever the position is, whatever the amount of money is. And these guys have really hit that. And even if in a few years you don't have enough money to live the rest of your life on, you've done well. I mean, if you manage that well, that's going to set you up for a good run, getting your legs underneath you in a future career. But as you're saying, if you haven't developed the disciplines and you don't have the North Star present in your life to really lead your life properly and practice good self-leadership, then all of a sudden you're in trouble.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I did mention I'm Dutch, right? So
yeah, so that helps.
I got that going for me.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm a import to Holland, but I like to say the Dutch have rubbed off on me. But I don't know if you're not Dutch, how much you can make that joke. I feel like the Dutch people, if you're Dutch proper, you can play that card. And then I feel like I need to be careful. So.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Do you find that when you look back on your time in the NFL? And you've obviously been able to be exposed to a variety of different coaches, players, all that, owners. Mm-hmm. Do you find that there are many lessons that you've taken away from your experience with other people's leadership and management that you end up applying today? Or do you say, man, the world is just so different between professional sports and anything I've done afterwards, that honestly, there's just a massive disconnect between the two.
I think that they're more similar than they are different.
Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, I played for two Hall of Fame coaches, Bill Cowher mm-hmm. and Marv Levy. And, you know, my leadership and what I try to do at Gateway Mission, how I engage people, interact with people, is very similar. And what I've learned in that type of leadership coming on a team standpoint is those individuals didn't necessarily focus on having the best person at every position, mm-hmm. right? Because what we want to do is go out and get the top talent at tight end, at quarterback, that's not realistic. What they did, and I think one of the trades of being a Hall of Fame coach, is identifying the pieces of the puzzle that will help move the team to allow the team to create those championship moments. And, you know, I apply that each and every day because in my leadership, I think it, first of all, I think the biblical principle of treating everybody as valuable members of your team,
yeah.
valuable members of your organization, valuable members. I don't care if you're taking out the trash or you're making the top decision in the boardroom meeting. Mm-hmm. There's value and worth in each one of those skill sets. And the owners, both of them, the Rooneys and Mr. Wilson, they were Hall of Fame guys, and so were those coaches. They knew names of not only the players, but the spouses and the kids. Mm. And I try to apply that each and every day when I go into work.
Yeah. Wow. Did you see them deal with conflict much up close and personal or not really?
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes you can mitigate it, right, with strong leadership, but inevitably, because you're dealing with people, you're going to have conflict, mm-hmm. right? And I think, you know, I know for a fact that the conflict that came up was mitigated by their strong leadership mm-hmm. at the beginning.
Yeah.
But when it did come up, it was addressed and it was fair and it was honest and they had good discussions with the people that were in conflict.
Right.
And then there was a resolution and yeah. you could move forward as a team.
It's interesting because we see so many books written that are from like a coach's perspective that then business guys will pick up to apply. And so but a lot of times those coaches have not lived in the business world. They're just applying lessons from coaching and then business guys resonate with them. But you've been able to kind of have a foot in both camps where you can say, no, the stuff I saw in my leaders, coaches, et cetera, I'm doing it outside of football now. And it really does apply. It's super cool.
And the other thing to yeah, that, Brian, ahead. If I may, is like the idea as a leader, continual improvement.
Mm-hmm.
Like we haven't arrived. You know,
right.
I don't know about you, and I know about me.
You've work arrived. In progress.
yeah.
Work in progress.
I mean, and so there's always lessons that you can learn.
Yeah.
And when I was working at the public policy organization, Christian organization based in Washington, D.C., my greatest joy was sitting across from business leaders mm-hmm. and hearing their story.
Hmm.
Because inevitably along the way, they had a story much similar to mine in that there was a pivot point and I had to make a decision and I went this way and I thought about it, prayed about it, you know, because we were dealing with a lot of Christian businessmen. And those are incredible stories to hear and great life lessons then to apply to your own life.
When you've had some, when it comes to pivot points, I mean, you've had some massive ones to go from football to more the public policy sector and then to now leading Gateway. It's just quite big shifts. Have you detected any common themes on what's helped you navigate that significant of shifts in your journey? Like if somebody right now was thinking, oh, I might fully switch careers, or any wisdom that you would pass along to them?
Yeah, I would say, you know, really spend some time, study the scriptures, get into your devotions, pray a lot. You know, how I arrived at Gateway Mission just real quickly is when I got to Buffalo, I was a rookie and started attending Bible studies. Each team has a chaplain. My wife attended the women's study, and then we had a couple study together, which became our church because we play on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know? And so through that, the team chaplain became kind of a conduit for a lot of speaking engagements. And, you know, there'd be this great youth event that would be going on here and there's big outreach there and all this kind of stuff. And, hey, rookie, you interested in going to the mission to share your testimony?
Yeah.
And I took it. And so for 5 of the 7 years I was in Buffalo, I was the Buffalo City Mission spokesperson.
That's cool.
And I just felt this like connection, you know, slopping food, sharing my testimony, mentoring guys, helping with the fundraising, bringing awareness to, because God's word's pretty clear, you know, they have worth and value, and he doesn't look on the outside,
right?
You know, the outside appearance, he looks on the inside. And because of that, we're created in God's image, and I wanted to make sure that they had a voice. And so come full circle, I retire. I went to work for a public policy organization, and how I came to Gateway Mission was we were supportive of Gateway for a number of years, simply because we had a connection in Buffalo City, so Buffalo City Mission. And so when we moved back to Holland, I was like, well, where's the mission?
Right.
You know, let's go, yeah. You know? And so I was studying the word, going through my daily devotion. I was getting kind of burned out with the travel, you know, because I was expected to be on a plane every other week, and I was all over the country. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but anybody that says they want to travel and work probably has not done it.
Right. Yeah. You know?
And so I was getting kind of sick of this. And for whatever reason, through my devotion and prayer time, I just felt a need to call Daryl. And I communicated that because we would drive
right past. Who was the current ED or the executive director of Gateway at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And was there for 30 years.
Yeah.
Just a visionary leader, just fantastic person. And, so I told my wife that because we would drive past Gateway, the thrift store, on the way to the north side to go to church every Sunday. And she's like, well, why? And I go, I don't know. I just feel compelled to do that. Mm-hmm. Well, a month went by and I didn't do it. So on the way to church, she elbows me and says, hey, did you ever call Daryl? And I'm like, well, no. She's like, I think you should.
Huh.
And I'll, to this day, that sticks with me because when your wife talks and says, I think you should, sometimes the Holy Spirit talks through your wife, right?
Yeah, right.
At least she does mine. And so I called Daryl, and literally we grabbed a cup of coffee the next day at the admin office. And, you know, he's a good executive director. And so he says, oh, I got Remus Mahir. I'm going to lay out all the stuff that we're doing, and I'm going to get him to hear by the end of the meeting, right? So he goes through that, and he goes about 15 minutes, and he's like, but what? Why did you call? What brought you in today?
Yeah.
Which is also, I think, a key to a great leader, listening, right? Being intentional about, hey, what's going on with you? And so I said, and I told him that story, and he got up without saying a word, and he shut the door, and he's like, I got goosebumps. And I go, that's weird. Should I? And he's like, well, here's the deal. He goes, we've been praying about a succession plan. We've been talking as a board. Hey, we need to identify somebody that has a passion for the work that we do. Mm-hmm. Somebody that's supportive of the work that we do. Somebody that has fundraising experience. Somebody that has good name recognition in the community. He's like, you're checking all those boxes. And he goes, I can't speak on behalf of the board, but I'm going to give him a call. And that literally happened in October by November, he had announced his retirement. I was named interim. And then by the following February, I became the full-time executive director. So, you know, God orchestrates the details of our life if we allow him to.
Yeah.
And we're intentional about listening to him. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that happens through our wife.
Yeah. That's so good because, I mean, it really comes back to what you said earlier with the whole idea of surrender at back when you were playing for Michigan. And what a surrendered heart and spirit look like now is that it's, you know, maybe it's not this, you know, game-changing injury. A surrendered heart is that spirit of I'm listening, I'm spending time in his word, I'm praying, I'm sensitive to when my wife is prompting things because I'm, 100%. I don't know how many times my wife has been, I think the Holy Spirit has, you know, using her vocal cords to speak to me. Mm-hmm. But what is so cool is the overall trajectory of your life. I think of Matthew 6 where it's like, you know, seek first the kingdom of God. And then Jesus says, you know, everything else is going to come. I'll take care of it. And it seems to me, as you share your story, you were orienting your life around the kingdom. You were orienting your family around the kingdom. You're tuned into the Holy Spirit. You're doing your best to be responsive. And I know neither of us would ever claim to be like, oh man, I catch every prompting. But your overall posture of heart was listening and submitted. And it is so cool to be like case example one of where God says, okay, I've got the rest. Like you would have, I mean, you in a million years, you wouldn't have thought, oh, I'm calling, you know, my future, what will become my future employer, and I'm going to take over. I mean, just not in a million years, but God's writing a better story than you could have written.
That's exactly right. And so, you know, and I think being faithful and being true to His word, being in the word, being prayerful and considerate, and then, you know, taking time to say, hey, okay, Lord, what are you speaking into my life right here? And I would just say that, no, listen, Brian, I ain't perfect. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I make mistakes all the time.
Sure.
My kids will attest to that. But, you know, one of the things that I've tried to teach to my kids is to tell my story.
Yeah.
Because, you know, God is faithful. And if you can just pass that on to your kids, look at this pivot point in my life. And you know what? So when your daughter calls you and she's struggling to find a job in St. Louis, you know, because she just got married and moved to a completely new town, and that's where her husband's from and their family, and I don't have any connections here, Dad. Well, hey, Sophie, have you prayed about it? So let me tell you a story that happened to me when I prayed about it.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
It's so good.
Why do football players like cry like that? Are you kidding me?
You know what?
I get all choked up over this.
It's funny because my boys have both played football since they were little, and at the essence of it, I mean, football is a very passionate sport. It really. So I feel like even though it comes off as a super macho sport, that kind of like get after itness really is just one way a lot of emotion is expressed. So I think like it's just funny. So I think football players, maybe more than other sports, I mean, it's just like you are so, it's such a passionate, emotional game. And I think that ends up manifesting in different places. I mean, whether it be like the big moment that's a, you know, a game time moment, or whether it's walking your daughter down the aisle, you know, all right. All that's in you no matter what.
Yeah.
What's it like when you come in? How long did you say Daryl was at Gateway before?
30 years.
30 years, yeah. And anybody who knows Daryl's leadership and the trajectory of Gateway, I mean, he's just an absolute game-changing kind of a leader. I mean, he started so much, innovator, all of this in our area. What's it like to come in as the new guy? And it's so cool. Like God had already planted in your heart a seed of passion for missions. So that's just amazing to see that through line all the way up until what you're doing now. But you're stepping into not just some shoes you haven't worn before. You were a spokesperson, but that's not running the organization. So you're stepping into some new shoes, but then the shoes, you already probably have significant size shoes, but I'm guessing, I mean, Daryl's, those are some leadership shoes. How do you navigate, you know, following a legend like that?
Yeah, well, I think first of all, you embrace the legend, right? You celebrate, and I did a lot of that early on. And I think we really, you know, celebrated Daryl with some of the work that we did. I will tell you that we're in the midst of a capital campaign that we're pretty excited about. You know, we bought the Davenport campus. We're calling it Eastport. It'll be our furthest east building. Okay. And we like port because, you know, port is, you know, in the storm, where do you seek refuge?
Yeah, that's good.
In the port, right? So there's going to be a lot of men over there that have an opportunity to have life transformation, hear the gospel for the first time, reset the trajectory of their lives, not only them individually, but for generations to come, to break that cycle of poverty and addiction. That's what Gateway Mission is all about. With the transformative power of the gospel. And that's why we're so thankful for partners like Engedi. I mean, you guys are helping us with our Corners of Field program, which I hope that it's a benefit to you all as well, giving back to the benevolence in your own community. But getting back to Daryl Bartlett, the reason I brought up Eastport is because when I first broached the conversation and said, hey, here's what we're going to do. I want to ask for permission to name the chapel the Bartlett Chapel.
Wow.
And we would have been at the Spoon, but at the time the Spoon wasn't open, so we were at Bob Evans, and with a tear in his eye, he's like, yeah, that's the only thing I'd want, you know?
Wow.
And so that speaks to his heart.
Yeah.
And I just hope that I can follow in his footsteps with the same kind of leadership that he provided for 30 years. Now, I'm not going to do it for 30 years. Well, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But I just really appreciate Gateway's legacy. We've been around for 120 years. We want to declare and demonstrate the love of Christ by providing housing and programs for those less fortunate and homeless in our community. And because of that legacy for 120 years, I think there's brand awareness, obviously, even though we changed our brand from Holland Rescue Mission. We wanted to, that happened before my tenure started, to a gateway to a new life. Mm-hmm. But you can see the campus over there expanding, the activity. But most importantly, I think beyond the facilities and what we're able to accomplish, the life transformation. So just a few weeks ago, we celebrated 15 graduates of our long-term program.
Wow.
Powerful, celebratory event of just commencement, right? Because this is a fresh start for them. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing to see. I mean, just to see kids that have expressed, you know, this is the first time that we've had a roof over our head since I was born and I'm 8.
Wow.
And mom's up there and she's graduating, and aunts and uncles, grandma and grandpa, and all these people are coming from all parts of the country to celebrate that graduation. That's life transformation,
yeah.
And it all starts with the gospel.
Those are those key moments where you're like, this is why I do what I do.
Oh, yeah.
All the other things, because you just see somebody take that step or have that accomplishment, and you go, this makes it all worth it. Just for the sake of those who may not be as familiar with Gateway Mission, maybe you could just share, I don't know how you do this in a brief format, but just kind of an overview of what Gateway does. Here's, yeah. We've got this, we got that, you know, this kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah, be happy to. Thank you for that. We have men's shelter and a women and children's shelter, and then we have our thrift store, production area, and all that kind of stuff. So on any given day, we're taking care of roughly 170 to 200 guests at our women and children's center and our men's shelter. Now, what does that look like exactly? We have kind of our lowest barrier, you know, so guys and gals and their kids that are coming directly off the streets can come into our open door, mm-hmm. we call it, which is literally what it says. I mean, it is what it is. It's an open door.
Yeah.
We want to be a soft, safe landing place that you feel secure. You can get a warm meal and a warm bed and clean clothes and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. We say that that's kind of a 14-day period, but it often extends well beyond the 14 days. I think our average stay is closer to 28 days.
Okay.
But we believe we're kind of a program mission. So we're very intentional about how we address homelessness, which can be a detractor to some people. We believe work is a good thing.
Yeah.
Work came before the fall. And so, you know, when you're staying with us, you're expected to get a chore. We had a tour today with a group that wanted to see, and they're like, I can't believe this place is so clean.
Yeah.
Well, we have high expectations for our guests, because guess what? They have value and dignity, and work oftentimes gives people dignity,
right.
And value. And so, you know, that's our open door. And then we have—
So after the 14 days, if yep. someone's there, and what I hear you saying, just to make sure I'm on the same page, so 14 days they can stay, and hey, it's more no strings attached-ish. I mean, it's a place to just—
We're getting to know each other.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. And because, then— Because, I, can I interrupt?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
People often say, well, what brings— How does somebody get homeless, or what brings on poverty?
Yeah, great question.
There's a myriad of examples on how you get there.
Right.
You know what the common theme to all of it? Hmm. Broken relationship.
Is that right?
And we would argue that you need to have a permanent relationship with your Heavenly Father, number mm-hmm. one. That's the most important relationship there is to restore. And so that's why we lead at every area with the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
But you and I, if my house burns down tomorrow, I'm not going to end up at the men's shelter.
Right.
Right? Because why? You have a relationship, a church community. You have friends and family, perhaps, or would take you in.
Right.
Got cousins. You know?
I hope so, but.
yeah, it depends on the day. Yeah. But, you know, and that's what we see with the people that we come in contact
yeah.
with. Can you imagine facing the idea that I got to go sleep somewhere because there's nobody out there for mm-hmm. me? And that's why we come alongside with people in our open door. We want to build a relationship. Oftentimes, these folks come to us with trauma, extensive trauma, mm-hmm. trust issues. So we're just getting to know you, Brian.
Yeah.
You know, tell me, how did you get here? You know, what happened to you that this is where you ended up?
Right.
Learning that story, building that relationship. And so that 14-day is, you know, it's arbitrary. Oftentimes, it's because of the situation, it extends well beyond that.
And then as they're longer, that's where there's, you start to step into more intentional next steps. And yeah. when you're talking about, we believe work is good, is it right away that folks are helping out around the yep. mission itself? Right off the bat?
Okay. Right off the bat. Yeah. So you check in, we assigned you a chore.
Okay.
It might be as simple as, hey, do you mind taking the garbage out in this area?
Mm.
You know?
Gotcha.
It's not uncommon and it's not that difficult. I mean, you're staying at our house.
Right.
And we're building expectations.
Right.
And, you know, that's part of, you know, staying here.
And then after they've been there, so I know a lot of folks who have been through, everybody always refers to it as the program.
Yeah.
So how does that work? When does a person make that transition?
Right. So we have the open door, and then there's really two tracks. So the next track is what we call our back to work program, which is called our pathway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a longer 4-month stay. And for people that just need to save up a little money so they get financial counseling. They got to meet with our guest advocate, but we want them to be intentional right off the bat as quickly as early as possible, start looking for a job
yeah.
because that's kind of the linchpin into making sure that you don't go through this cycle again and
right,
again,
right.
having a stable job. And here in West Michigan, you know, you can walk out the door and find a pretty stable job
mm-hmm.
unless there's a problem beyond that, which usually means that you have an addiction or something like that and really a significant trauma. So pathway is one track where you get back, save some money, get a job, and then move out. And we have lots of people that do that in that 4-month period.
Mm-hmm.
But then if there's bigger trauma, there's addiction issues, then we want to put you into our longer-term program. And there's
okay.
two things there that we call Forge, which I like the word pictures because you're building and you're molding and yeah, you're
refining.
Refining, yeah. That's exactly right. And that's a 9-month program.
Yeah.
And then after you graduate from the 9-month program, we do offer through an application process the opportunity to still stay with us with what we call the Thrive program, which is an additional 9 months. And that is a paid internship.
Okay.
So you're working with us. So all along the way, if you're in Forge and Thrive, you're over at our production floor learning practical vocational skills, mm-hmm. life skills. You're spending half your day in the classroom learning how to, you know, biblical discipleship, godly principles, learning job skills, vocational training, that kind of stuff, and then working the rest of the time out on the production floor,
yeah.
learning light manufacturing, getting a high-low certification so you can go to work here at one of our great manufacturing plants that we have partnerships with.
Yeah.
Also a new one, you know, for your listening audience is the Spoon Restaurant, which opened. We always had a culinary program.
Yeah, I need to get over there. It looks okay. incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard somebody that just ate there the other day, and they said it was fantastic, the food was. So
yeah.
it was cool to hear.
Yeah. So that was really an outpouring of we've always had a culinary track. And so because we ask our guests to also serve food, it's important for them to serve it safely and have
yeah.
proper hygiene and that kind of stuff. So that was part of our culinary program. And we had a supporter get really excited about something that they saw, you know, down in Naples, Florida, at St. Matthew's House called Lulu's Kitchen.
Hmm.
And this is a track for people to learn the culinary skills, back of the house, front of the house, line cooks, all that kind of stuff. And then have a place to put them and to learn that training and then ultimately hire them. So
yeah.
currently we have the restaurants open, been open since October. We have 5 students in that program.
Okay.
Cass is a great story. She came to us and actually she was the one who her son said has not seen a roof over his head since he's been alive. He's now 8. He's got a roof over his head. And she's working full-time at the restaurant.
Oh,
it's amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's what it's all about. So cool
yeah.
to see the innovation continue. I mean, that was such a trademark sort of or hallmark mark of Daryl's leadership. And it's so cool to see you just running with it, continue to innovate and try new things. I love it. I was there working in the retail side of things, and I was in the back of house and working with some of the volunteers and also some of the folks who were in the program. And I had a really cool conversation with one lady. She was, I would say, in her probably late 20s, maybe early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And she said it was actually her second time in the program. And I said, really? Tell me about that. And she explained that the first time she went in and she was taking the classes, but she thought, you know what? I don't need any of this stuff. I just hit a bad patch financially, And I'll, you know, check off the boxes that they need to have a roof over my head, but I don't really need all this stuff. Learn the Bible stuff, but no, I don't really need any of that either. So she ends up getting to a point. She's some way through the program, not all the way through. She says, yeah, I'm just going to bug out now, do it on my own. I'm fine. I've got enough money saved.
Yep.
I'll be good. And sure enough, she's out on her own for a couple months, full on, like kind of a crash and burn situation again. And that was for her a wake up. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't have it as together as I thought. So she said, and this was such a good, I actually shared this when I was preaching once. I said, she said, I came back to the program, said, would you have me? And she said, I needed to start all over from the beginning. And she said, I knew I needed to, but she said, the thing that was different this time is I came in with humility. Mm-hmm. I came in with saying, I need to learn the things that they're teaching. I need a relationship with God to make this work. And she said, because of coming in with that different heart posture, everything about this journey has been different. She said, I'm a different person because of it. And she was excited to finish the program. She wasn't, you know, all the way through it, but when I was talking with her, but she was excited about it. She's growing. The person that I know who helps coach her was saying, oh, it's like a different person.
Yeah.
So it just was really a cool example to me of listening to her tell her story, first person for me, just hearing it. And just hear when somebody is willing to engage with humility and invite God into that, yeah. I mean, transformation is very possible. So I just can't commend the work you guys are doing enough. I love it. And it's such an honor for us to partner with it.
Yeah. And I think that's really, really cool. And that's why we do what we do, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, for that life transformation, and then to see somebody come in the time, you know, a second time, and all of a sudden they get it. What I hear over and over again from students that come through our program, guests that come through our program and excel, is they have a consistent theme in that they had to be ready. Mm-hmm. And so my encouragement to your listeners too is be very intentional with your philanthropy and charity. There's actually a bad way to give somebody something.
Yeah.
You know, helping can actually hurt if you don't do it with intentionality. And that's why Gateway Mission is, like, I think, cutting edge, because, you know, and we get dinged in the community a little bit because, now, wait a second, you mean that there's a requirement or there's some accountability here? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. And, you know, there are some people here in town that we know they hang out at certain locations. We get calls all the time. Yeah. You know, can you come down and see so-and-so? And we're like, yeah, no, they don't want our help.
Right.
You know? And I would just encourage your folks to make sure that your charitable contributions, the charity that you're giving, you're not loving somebody to death with that charity.
Yeah.
Because you can literally be giving somebody a handout and they're utilizing it in a way that's not beneficial for them, and you could be hurting them.
Yeah, that's such a great word. There's, of course, a book I'm sure you're well familiar with, When Helping Hurts.
Yep.
And I'm forgetting the author's name. Is that Brian Fickert? Is that one, or is that a different? There's Toxic Charity by Bob Lupton.
Yeah.
And then there's When Helping Hurts, and I'm forgetting the author's name. But if someone wants to do some deeper work in understanding how to give in a way that's ultimately life-giving, those are great reads. I remember once I was reading in a magazine article that was, they interviewed different advocates for the poor and for the homeless, and asked each of them, should you give money to the random person on the street? Mm-hmm. And these are folks who literally have made it their lifetime call to come alongside people in their times of greatest need. And every one of them, to a person, said, outside of a specific prompting from the Holy Spirit that you are supposed to do it, they said, but we wouldn't do it. As a matter of practice, we wouldn't, because generally speaking, that's not going to be the most helpful path for them. And so I think that's a really good word. If you were coaching somebody who says, well, I would like to make a difference, obviously one of the things we can do, which our church does and Christine and I do personally, is come alongside the work of Gateway. Anything else you would encourage people to think about if they say, I know there's needs in my community and I want to make a difference, but how do I do that?
Yeah, well, we're the only shelter in Ottawa and Allegan County, and we're very intentional about serving that population. But I would certainly encourage your folks to Number one, make sure that you're reading some of those resources that you just shared, mm-hmm. because I think it was eye-opening to me, because as a Christian, I look at, well, you know, the Lord has blessed me so much. Mm-hmm. My goodness, how can I not give a couple bucks? But, you know, I think, you know, we are very intentional about the program and how we approach homelessness and poverty. It may come with strings to some people, or be the view that it comes with strings. We simply say that there's accountability and that there's value and worth. And if you give somebody something without any accountability, you're really saying that they don't have any value, right? And so we want to come alongside your listening audience, and you know, you can certainly reach out. We have churches literally calling us, telling us, we have councils or boards that will call us and say, hey, listen, you know, do you guys mind, you know, just spending some time with us? Because we've come alongside a family and we thought it was going to be a temporary thing. And we're a year and a half into this and we think we're making it worse. Mm. And in fact, they are.
Yeah.
And so we're very intentional about how we provide those temporary assistance, because it should be temporary, you know, relief, you know, right. Let's get you out of the cold. Let's get you into a warm place and have some clothes, yeah. and a warm meal and that kind of stuff. But that's a temporary fix. So, you know, a lot of folks will talk about, well, you know, we have this crisis of affordable housing. In actuality, you know, housing is not the primary reason that somebody's homeless or in poverty. You know, there are, you know, mental health mm-hmm. issues. There's all kinds. It comes down to, again, that broken relationship.
Yeah.
Which we, again, because we're a Christian organization, we lead with Christ. We're sharing the gospel. When you want to see life transformation, and this guest that you were working with, mm-hmm. that's what had to happen.
Yeah.
They had to be ready.
Yeah. Boy, that's so good. And that general point of readiness, I mean, isn't that true for all of us at some level? I think God's always, he's always got something more for us. He's always inviting us into the next step. But there is, you just have to be in your own heart. You have to be ready to trust him. Sometimes that's a new sacrifice. Sometimes it's just a step out of your comfort zone. Sometimes it's a move. It's all kinds of things. But if you're not ready and you say, no, it's got to be this way and I'm digging in, then all of a sudden you're going to miss some of what God wants to do. When your heart's soft, game changer.
Yeah, and just to come full circle, because we were talking about it earlier, I was angry when I got injured and tore up my rotator cuff. And you know what? I had to be ready. Mm-hmm. I had to come to him, seek him in humility. And man, he's got so much better, such a better plan for you than what you could ever imagine or hope for.
Yeah.
So that's the hope that we share each and every day at Gateway.
Well, that's a great, great word to end on. I think that you guys are doing just such incredible work. And as I already said, it's great to be able to partner with you. I've had some of my best conversations back in the day. It's been a while. I used to at lunch, I would come in and serve food, and I got to know some guys, and they turned into long-term relationships. We would catch up, and they, you know, we'd text, and I'd take them out to eat periodically. One of my friends that I met at Gateway ended up moving to Grand Rapids. And so whenever I was in Grand Rapids, I would make sure I took him out. But it's so transformational just to know and be known in mm-hmm. outside of maybe your own native cultural comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And those were some really incredible conversations. And I've continued to have those over the years here and there. And really a lot of those conversations and friendships have been made possible by Gateway.
Yeah.
And so I'm so grateful for your leadership. I'm so grateful for what Gateway does. And our prayers and encouragement are with you. I know you're wearing big, important shoes in our community. And so keep up the great work.
Brian, thank you for having me. I just really appreciate our partnership. And it just means the world to have your support. And so thank you for all that you do on behalf of Gateway.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jay. And one of the big takeaways I'll have from what Jay shared was how he took that injury experience when he played for Michigan, and when he finally got to the point of inviting God into it, when he finally got to the point of surrender, God took the very thing that looked like the mother of all setbacks, and he turned it into a springboard for Jay into the good plan that God had for him. And so I just want to say to you, whatever you're going through right now, this is the time to surrender. This is the time to lay out. Maybe you want to put your hands before the Lord and just say, God, I'm giving you this trial. I'm giving you this obstacle. I'm giving you this setback. I don't know how your story is going to work out. What I do know is that God promises he has good plans for you if you are living and called according to his purpose. Well, if you were encouraged by this conversation today, then please do rate and review our podcast. It really does help us get the word out about Made to Advance. And I want to just encourage you, we've got more incredible conversations and more great guests coming. So until next time, just know you were made to advance.